From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made in Wake County, North Carolina, 1976. In Wake County schools, essentially, the suburbs were largely white, and the Raleigh City schools were largely non-white. In 1976, the county and the city merged school districts and put in place a plan to limit the percentage of students in poverty in any given school. For the most part, broadly speaking, it has worked. And here's the odd thing. Very few other school systems have followed the Wake County model. Here in Rochester, there's a common viewpoint that the merger ship has long since sailed. 20 school districts are not going to agree to merge, but our schools have a segregation issue, a diversity problem, and a group of parents and educators is not giving up. The group calls itself Great Schools for All. They've just released a new survey of 600 Monroe County parents. 300 parents in the survey were from the suburbs, 300 from the city. The survey found that parents want more diversity in schools. They value it. And this group, Great Schools for All, has an idea for making that happen. This hour, we explore the results of their survey and the plan to increase diversity and improve education for our children. Let me go ahead and welcome my guests, two co-conveners of Great Schools for All, John Wilkinson. Welcome, John.
Thank you very much.
And Lynette Sparks here as well. Welcome, Lynette.
Thanks, Evan.
Larry Marks is here, the executive director of the Children's Agenda. Larry, welcome to you.
Thanks, Evan.
And Mark Hare is here with Great Schools for All. Mark, welcome to you as well.
Thank you, Evan.
Mark, you know, I want to make sure my premise is right here, but I talked to a lot of people in this community and they felt like post-Wake County, it had to have happened in the 80s, that we had this opportunity that maybe we could have tried to desegregate more and that we missed that chance and that here we are more segregated than ever and there's no going back. I mean, do you hear that cynicism, that concern?
I do hear that concern, and it's certainly, if you just look at the numbers, it would have been much easier to tackle this problem in the 80s than it is today. Especially if you just look at the poverty, not just the poverty in the city schools, but the poverty in many of our suburban school districts. So you have a number of school districts that are at or near that 50% level of free and reduced price lunches. So it's a big problem. There's no question about that. But all of that said, I think we have a pretty powerful opportunity right now to begin to make some changes. And I think we're past the conversation about whether or not we ought to just consolidate school districts and whether or not there is a way to do this more efficiently, more effectively, and that people would support. And I think the study you alluded to is pretty convincing evidence that the door is open.
Yeah, we're going to be going over some of the results of this survey. John and Lynette, tell us about what you wanted to learn with this before we kind of start working through this. So why did you do this survey?
Well, we have been compelled by the Raleigh experience and other experiences nationally that socioeconomic integration is a way to raise achievement for all students, as well as to build the kind of American community we want to live into in the 21st century. And we wanted to test that premise locally. So a good idea is only a good idea if people are willing to buy into it. So we were able to commission this survey and reach out to a pretty significant statistically number of parents, not just individuals, but parents of school-aged children, both in the city and in the suburban areas, to say, we've got this notion about socioeconomic integration, inter-district magnet schools. Tell us if there's any possibility that you would be interested in it if it comes to real life.
And what you found, Lynette, is that parents are interested, aren't they?
We did. And I think, you know, we learned a little bit of this last fall when we held several focus groups, which gave us some inkling that there was a different thought out in the community than what might be popularly described. And so by doing this survey, we were able to put some real hard data behind that. And we do find that parents today, particularly parents of school-aged children, which is who this survey talked to, are interested and they are open to diversity.
So we're going to be talking about this idea for this intra-district magnet schools as it relates to solving some of these concerns that parents have. But listeners, let me read some of this and ask yourself if this would apply to you, if you would be part of these numbers. Among the survey's findings, 83% of parents indicated it was somewhat or very important to their child's education that he or she attend a school with children from diverse ethnic, racial, and socioeconomic backgrounds, 83%. 87% of all respondents indicated they would consider enrolling a child in one or more of the magnet schools mentioned in the survey. 32% indicated they would consider all seven of the magnet schools listed. We'll talk about that in a moment. 69% said they would consider sending their children to a magnet school that is half low income and half middle class. And almost three-quarters, 73% of all parents, indicated that they would consider sending their child to a magnet school on a voluntary basis, even if it were outside their home district, if transportation needs were met and it provided opportunities not available in their home district. Those numbers, to me, indicate, Lynette, these are not close margins. Parents value this diversity. They want to find it.
They really do. And I think, you know, Mark has used the term sea change. Our world is changing. We see this certainly in social media, what folks are exposed to. We hear the trends of where demographics, both racially and ethnically and socioeconomically, are moving in the future. And we know that in a global world, our parents are telling us, we're seeing what's happening. We want our children to be prepared, not just today, but for the future.
And Larry Marks, I think what makes this really interesting is sometimes we view education as this zero-sum game. In other words, if you're going to help kids in poverty, you're probably going to end up taking away something from kids who are not in poverty, et cetera. And what we're finding here, first of all, we know just on an evidence-based perspective, that is, generally speaking, not true. But we also see that parents don't really view it that way, which is interesting.
Right. Yeah, parents understand there's a lot to be gained from diversity in a school population, whether you come from a low-income or a higher-income background. But speaking of the evidence, it is just completely compelling that for low-income students, their performance usually is improved substantially by attending a higher diversity school. By limiting the number of students of low-income background in a given school population, you can increase the low-income students' achievement to be at a par or above where their peers are.
All right, so everybody's asking, what do we do about this? What can actually be done? You know, we're not going to be Wake County. And again, I don't know if this framing is wrong, but if I remember correctly, they had a 40% threshold that no school in Wake County could be more than 40% free or reduced lunch. That led to some busing to kind of make the numbers work. And some people said, well, I don't want my child to be bused. And it was one of these, well, we're not going to let the perfect be the enemy of the good. For the most part, it worked out very well. Mm-hmm. There have been some tweaks over the years. But if we're not going to do that, then Mark here, what is the proposal? What can we do?
Well, the proposal that Great Schools has come out with, which is not quite finished, but mostly finished, and it's the entire thing is on our website at gs4a.org, so you can take a look at it yourself. Basically, what we're calling for is a network of inter-district magnet schools, which would have to be socioeconomically diverse. Now, we're saying about 50-50 low-income to middle class or better. Those numbers, by the way, are a little bit soft because there is a tipping point in each school where the level of poverty seems to influence outcomes, but it's not a fixed number that's exactly the same everywhere. So we're saying about 50-50. Each of these schools would have to have some kind of unique programming, whether that's arts or health sciences or language immersion or early college, high school or whatever, something that is either not available in any other school district or that is not available at the right capacity in some other school district. So it'd have to be different. And these schools could be elementary, they could be high school, they could be middle schools, they could be some combination of the above. They could be operated by individual school districts that would open them up to students from around the county. They could be open. They could be run by a collaboration of school districts, two or more. They could be sponsored by a university, perhaps in collaboration with the school district. They could even, in some cases, be charter schools, if those charter schools could be socioeconomically diverse. So there's a lot of possibilities there. And, applicants would then have to demonstrate that they have a plan for building a diverse student population, for also building a socioeconomically diverse and racially diverse staff. They would have to have a plan that would they have to have a unique curriculum that they could talk about and show, and they would also have to have a plan for including all students in the life of the school, which is a big thing. It's not just integration that matters. It's how you build a school community once you have an integrated school. So that's basically our proposal in a nutshell. And we're floating it out there and seeing what happens.
Seven schools total, is that right?
No. Seven schools were mentioned in the
Seven schools were mentioned, but how many schools are we talking about, Mark? I'm sorry.
Whatever it takes. So
right.
There's not a fixed number of that. I mean, it would probably be many schools.
Okay.
Over a period of years.
Okay. But would you roll it out and start, you know, kind of small and slow? What's the reception been among school districts here? What you're talking about here are a number of options for how they'd be run, whether it's one district, shared among districts, and until you kind of pin that down, I don't know if people feel like, you know, this horse is ever going to get out of the barn here.
How it would unfold is, I suppose, yet to be seen. I think it would be a slow rollout. I mean, this is a heavy lift. It's a new concept. It's going to take a while for that to happen. I think every one of us would say if we could completely integrate all the schools of Monroe County next year, that's what we would do. But really, it's going to take some educational entrepreneurs coming forward with ideas, selling them, building a community, then seeing what happens. I think it's going to take, and this seems to be consistent with a lot of other school districts or a lot of other places that have tried this, we can produce all kinds of data about how effective integration is, but what matters is how do people perceive it, what's the word of mouth, what are parents finding out from their friends who send kids to these schools. So I don't know what the magic number is. I mean, I think within a couple of years we would hope to have two or three or four schools open, and then it would grow from there. But it will take some time for that to happen.
I do think, Evan, if I can add to that.
Yeah, absolutely, please.
It will be slow. I think what we're looking for is somebody willing to take that first step. And I think once that first step happens, then others will follow. I think in our ideal world, it would be some proportion of schools located within the city limits and then some with suburban locations. I think that's kind of the point, with students going in all directions all over the place. And then we'll see that this works. This is actually a compelling idea that works in real time. And then other operators will say, all right, we're willing to jump in. Mm-hmm. So I think that we're at the point now where we've got this data, we've got a compelling idea, we're ready to find some people who are willing to talk with us about actually doing this.
Do we know what kind of funding you need and where the money might come from?
We're working
Don't
on
everybody
it.
Jump we're, in at once there.
We're
money
working
comes
on it.
Up.
We're working on it. Well, I mean, it one of the premises is that you need to build some incentives into this to make it appealing to school districts and to others. But the other kind of premise is that we're not increasing the number of students. So unless you're going to duplicate efforts, unless you're going to just say we're going to build massive new schools somewhere and we're going to have to provide all kinds of state aid for those students over and apart from what's already there, it doesn't necessarily have to be an expensive new proposition. Will there be some reallocation of funding? Will funding follow the students as it does now with urban suburban? In some form, that's going to have to happen. But we're actually working with some experts on this and a consultant to kind of develop what's the best way to talk about a funding formula? How does that money move around? What are the kinds of facilities that could be open? I mean, a school district, you already see it, for example, with the city now trying to invite suburban students to the new PTEC program at Edison. Well, that's a perfect example of this. I mean, you have a city school building. Open it up to other students from outside the district, invite them in. It doesn't necessarily have to be a massive new construction project. It can be, certainly can utilize existing schools.
In fact, we think the buildings probably already exist. We're not building poor in this community. I think the cost for this will be in the training and the recruiting and the program development, but the real estate issue, I think, will kind of take care of itself.
And it's clear there's federal funds available, state funds available. The point is to put together a compelling proposal that has the political support locally that can draw those funds down. And I think what this survey shows is that there's huge customer demand and unmet supply. There's not supply meeting the demand for these kinds of schools. We think that all of this is voluntary, and parents should have as many options as possible for their kids for whatever works. So we're not suggesting this as the silver bullet. We don't believe in that. We think that there are many options that can work for different parents and different kids, but this is not even on the table right now, and that is clearly not what people want, not what parents of school children today want.
All right, so listeners, I'd like to hear from you about your thoughts on this proposal for a magnet school system that would effectively start to desegregate and add diversity, socioeconomic diversity, racial and cultural diversity in our schools that in many ways lack that right now. And I'd like to hear from you if you support that. 844-295-TALK. It's toll free. 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI. 263-9994. I think it was last week that Erica Bryan in the Democrat and Chronicle wrote the story of the family that's kind of doing the reverse of the urban suburban, sending their kids to city schools. And there were some conservative commenters online who lampooned this family for doing worse by their kids. And the implication was, why would any family want to do that? You know, you're living in, geographically, you're living in a suburb that's got technically better schools or quote-unquote better schools, and then why would you do this for your kids? Larry, when you say there is all kinds of demand, the implication is that family that got profiled is hardly the only one that would want that for a number of reasons, but what do you make of the people who don't understand that? They say, I don't get this. You know, you're living in the suburbs. It's better for your kids.
When we went to Raleigh, North Carolina, we were surprised to see one of the hotly contested schools was in one of the worst neighborhoods in the city of Raleigh. And people would compete from suburbs an hour away by car to get their child in this school in the central city. And the reason is because there were offerings there, a quality of education that weren't otherwise available to them. Right now, we don't have enough magnet programs like health sciences or STEM or STEAM with arts, including heavy science background, or other schools of the arts, like middle schools of the arts or other arts programs available. And we know, based on the survey, that parents really want that for their child, whether they're in Pittsford or Penfield or the city of Rochester.
Okay. Mark Hare, what do you think?
Well, I think, in fact, there are many families who would consider moving their kids into the city schools. But I think that thinking that why would anyone do that, that's the thinking of people in my generation, well into our 60s, maybe people in their 50s. What we find with this survey is that not just a sea change, but there is a generational line that has been crossed. And that parents today, and we're talking, who are these parents? They're people in their late 20s to early 40s. They're millennials. This is a no-brainer for them. We're not finding people saying, why would anyone do that? What we're finding is people saying, young parents saying, why wouldn't we do this? This is what our kids need to be able to survive and to be effective in the world that we now live in. So none of that means that they will send their kids to a neighborhood school that they feel unsafe. It doesn't mean that at all, but it means that if you begin to create alternatives, whether they're in the city or in the suburbs, where integration would occur, that people would be good with that. So I think that the critical numbers are the numbers that were coming from people who actually have children in school, not from people who thought about this issue 30 years ago and said it can't happen.
This is an interesting premise here, this generational line that Mark is talking about, that people in Mark's age cohort are more likely to think, hey, move to the suburbs, better schools, better for your kids, the end. And now there's this value of sort of embracing, not only embracing diversity, but seeing that American companies have done better when they have diverse boards and diverse workforces, and that kids are sort of the educational environment that is monolithically racial is not necessarily a good thing. But I'm curious to know why. Does everybody sort of agree with Mark on that, by the way?
Yes.
So if everybody
just
agrees with that, what happened? What is it that convince the next generation of parents to change? I mean, I don't know if anybody knows the actual answer, but I'm curious to know what
anecdotally,
you think.
I mean, we remember when the Canadian Prime Minister introduced his cabinet and the press said, why does your cabinet look like this? And he said, because it's 2016. So I think families, citizens of that generation realize the world in which they're living needs to provide for their children the means and the tools and the abilities to navigate and live in this world, which is increasingly diverse in all the ways we think about it. I think to go back to Larry's response, families aren't going to want an inferior curriculum or an unsafe setting. So if we can address those issues and have the kind of diversity we're talking about, what a wonderful package. So I'm sure, I read things on diversity every day and why this is the new frontier that we're living in. I just think the parents that Mark was talking about and that responded to our survey just kind of know that in their bones, that for their children to have the kind of lives they're going to have and to be the kind of citizens they want them to be, they need to understand how diversity works in their own experiences.
Let me just, if I could just piggyback one thing on that, Evan, which is interesting to me. We've talked to a number of young parents who, faced with that choice, should I stay living in the Park Avenue neighborhood where I like to live in the city, or should I move to Brighton when I have kids? A lot of them are still making the same choice that parents made 20 years ago. They moved to Brighton. They don't feel they can find a good school in the city. The difference is they don't like that choice.
This is important. We're not saying it's not happening the way
right.
it used to.
No, it happens. But the difference is they don't like that choice. They don't think that's good enough. They don't fault Brighton schools or Pittsford schools. That's not my point. But unlike parents from previous generations which moved to the suburbs and said, well, we got what we need now, that's good enough, these parents are saying it's better than a school that we're not confident in the city, but what we want is a diverse school, and we're not getting it.
All right. So
that's the difference.
And that's what you're with the magnet plan here. And again, if you want to check it out, what we're talking about, gs4a.org, Good Schools for All.
Great schools. That's okay.
I demoted it.
We'd be happy with good schools for all. But it's...
Even good schools for all would be great, but great schools for all, my goodness. GS4A.org. You can find out more about that. And that's what I've invited the group to come on and talk about today. But let me aim this question directly at maybe the parents more in the cohort that Mark is talking about. If you're in your 20s or 30s or 40s and you know, you're willing to call the program, I'd love to hear from you about what you want for your kids, because that point should be stressed that Mark just made here. That old paradigm is still happening. Live in the city, young professionals and older sort of empty nesters living in the city, living downtown, and then you switch when you have kids, and then maybe you come back later. That's still happening, but it's this awareness that shouldn't maybe be happening now. I'd love to hear from you. 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255, or 263-WXXI, 263-9994. Let me get a couple of listener questions that have come in various forms here. First one from a listener says, how does your panel feel about kids splitting time between schools, meaning diversity through to eighth grade and then less diverse after, such as, say something like, if you live in East Rochester or the city of Rochester, and then after eighth grade, you know, parents who send their kids to an independent school like Harley, you know, does that offer more of a balance? Is that, you know, sort of a, how do you weigh that? Larry, what do you think?
Well, we're not here to judge any of those choices about like when or if or this one versus that one, but I think the point is the system should have more options available to parents so that there could be choices like that where a parent decides to have a particular school and a diverse background at certain ages and then switches for whatever reason to a different school later on. The problem is that there aren't those choices yet available.
Okay. I think to add to that, what we should be sure to say is in this conversation that we believe in a kind of a menu of options for families to have. We're working very closely with the team working with the Anti-Poverty Initiative and have some common language baked into our goals and their hopes and dreams, so that we know that there's talk about community schools, building up neighborhoods with a school at the center and lots of services around. We love that idea and would support that a lot. We think alongside that, a network of magnet schools and that would benefit those neighborhoods, whether those children are staying in those neighborhoods and going to school there or going to a different place and coming back. All that, I think, works together for the common good in terms of building up particular neighborhoods. So it's I think, important for us to say this is not a competitive idea with some other ideas out there, but we're really trying to collaborate with lots of different groups thinking about education.
All right, Tim in Pittsford, first up on the phone. I know Tim is a parent who lives in the suburbs now, but you used to live in the city, Tim?
I did. We lived in the Park Ave area, and we did exactly what one of your guests said. We moved from there to Brighton to Pittsford. And we would have loved to stay in the Park Ave area, but there's one simple fact that the city school districts are dead last in the state of New York for everything. I believe there's 420 school districts. They are rated 420. And I'm guessing there was a survey done, but we have friends who are in their 30s with kids, And if you ask them if they would think about sending their kids to the city school district, one of your guests said there's plenty of families that would like to or really want to. They just look at you like, I mean, what do you ask them? Like, their head is about to explode. There's a reason why we moved out to Pittsburgh, and that was for the schools. And, it sounds like from one of your guests again saying that we're half in the wrong because our kids aren't going to live up to their true potential because they went to Pittsburgh schools, which are some of the best in the state and in the top 125 in the country, and they're somehow getting slighted for that. I just don't get it. Like, going back to the safety part of it, there's no chance in hell that I would send my kids to the city school district. And I don't care what color anyone is. But if they're talking in their new contract about what teachers can and can't do as far as having kids arrested, and then you're saying, oh, come back into the city, that's actually, I'm sorry, but you don't hear that in the suburbs where part of the contract talks are, can this person be arrested in class? I mean, it's bizarre.
Tim,
tell me where I'm wrong.
All right, thanks for the phone call, Tim. I think Larry Marks wants to start by clarifying that I think in many ways Larry is empathetic towards Tim's concern as a parent, and certainly not saying that the parents in this survey or the parents you're talking to are saying, yes, right now, given all current conditions being the same, we all want to send our kids back to city schools. Unfortunately, that's not the case for the reasons Tim stated. Go ahead, Larry.
Right, absolutely. The title of the initiative here is Great Schools for All. And what we're trying to do is lift the educational opportunities available, including these magnet schools that would have the effect of integrating student populations. I hear you very strongly, Tim, about we all are going to do what's right for our kids first and foremost. And there's no judgment implied at all about parents doing what's right for their kids. What we want to do, though, is put some more options on the board, including integrative magnets that allows all students options for things like a STEM program or an arts program that aren't even available in the suburbs. If that might be available and might fit your kids, then it becomes an attractive choice. And it's not involuntary, it's all voluntary. It's finding those things, and there's huge customer demand based on this parent survey that are going to appeal to parents to create great schools for all.
Okay.
Yeah,
Go ahead.
Yeah, I would say that it is about choice. We want our parents to have choices, and many of our parents today, particularly in the city, don't have choices. And certainly, again, from our survey, we've heard that there are parents that have made the choices they have. They're doing the best for their kids, and there are some certainly that would consider other choices if they were available. But we're not talking about replicating what is. We're talking about creating something new that builds in diversity.
The phones are all of a sudden going nuts. So let's get our only break in. And let me just reset that if you're just joining us, the conversation with the team from Great Schools for All is about what to do to better serve parents who do want diversity, who obviously value socioeconomic, racial diversity, cultural diversity in schools, which right now we don't really have. We have a lot of segregation in our community. We have to be very honest about that. And what you just heard from Tim the caller is reflective in a lot of parents. They would have stayed in Rochester if the schools were more attractive. They weren't, they moved. And this group has come in and said, what does history tell us? Well, if we could go back to the 1980s, we'd love to sort of relaunch that campaign to maybe follow in the footsteps of the Wake County, North Carolinas, that integrated an entire county and have had really good results for decades. But they're realizing that that is not likely to be achieved, and they're saying, what's the next best actually achievable model? And they've created this magnet school model that would be, as they said, voluntary, that would serve the parents who want better schools with more diversity, some in the city, some not, probably with students from all kinds of different backgrounds. In fact, they mentioned, I think, a 50-50, at least 50% from low income, 50% from middle to upper class. And can they make this work? That's what the conversation's about. There's a lot of people waiting to join the discussion, so let's come right back and do that on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Thursday on The Next Connections, it's the final event in the Reshaping Rochester series for 2016. The theme has been Equity by Design. We continue the discussion
on how we can see downtown and city design that helps bring jobs and development without leaving people in poverty behind. Then second hour, disparities in healthcare in the LGBTQ community. Talk with you Thursday. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. The team from Great Schools for All includes John Wilkinson and Lynette Sparks, co-conveners. Mark Hare is with the group, and Larry Marks is the executive director of the Children's Agenda. They're joining us for this hour to talk about this proposal. And you ought to read more about it if you want to learn more about not only the survey they just did, but also this growing and sort of developing plan. GS4, the number 4, GS4A. org. Little Flower on Twitter says school integration is long, long overdue in Rochester. Thank you, Great Schools for All, for championing this cause. Chris wants to know, would this magnet school plan be something that could be administered through the existing BOCES system? That seems a logical path. Possible?
The answer is it is possible.
Okay.
I mean, that's one of the things we're looking into, but that is a vehicle that does seem to be plausible, yeah.
Okay. And Lynette, I know you wanted to sort of piggyback on something that we were discussing in our first half hour before we get back to the phones. Go ahead, Lynette.
Well, talking about why diverse schools, one of the things I think that we believe is that part of the curriculum of a school is not just what is taught, but it is who you are with. Mm-hmm. And so no matter where our children are at, being amongst a diverse group of students, just through their interactions, children learn from one another. And they learn about things culturally. They learn about relationships. They learn about connections that will serve them not just in the present, but what will serve them in the future.
All right, back to the phones. Pete in Pittsford wants to follow up on Tim in Pittsford's call. Go ahead, Pete.
Evan, it's Keith.
Hi, Keith. Go ahead, Keith.
I don't live in Pittsford. I'm just driving through right now. The gentleman who called about Pittsford, people don't understand. You have poor kids that come out of the city school district that excel greatly in educational level. And they still are poor, but the reason why they do it is they have a family support behind them. You have too many single parents in Pittsford. You have too many, or it's not Pittsford, excuse me, the city. You have poverty. What creates the poverty? Being a single parent, being a teenage mom, there's probably kids that go to the city school district that live with their grandparents. And then you have these parents who don't even care what the kids do. I'm willing to bet you that parents in Pittsford care more about their kids individually than the city school district. And once you have a good family support behind the students, you will have successful students.
But Keith, why do you think Tim would disagree with that? I think he would agree with that.
Well, I know. I'm just mentioning what the guy from Pittsburgh, he's indicting the city school district as pathetic because of the graduation rate. Well, there's more than the graduation rate. There's a lot of other mitigating circumstances, and parental involvement is the biggest one, and it always gets overlooked. So you got to pay them more. No, you got to have a parent who's going to say to the kid, okay, you're going to come home and do your homework.
Keith, thanks for the phone call. I don't think Tim would disagree with any of that, to be honest with you. I mean, I don't know Tim personally, but I get the sense that what he might say as a parent is what Keith is saying is true, but knowing that that is broadly speaking, and now we're generalizing and we always have to be careful, but broadly speaking, he wanted his kids in a district where there is more parental involvement, all of those things that Keith is talking about. Larry Marks from the Children's Agenda wanted to jump in.
Yeah, we believe all parents love their kids,
yes.
Whether from a low-income background, upper-income background, white, black. Parenting is like the hardest job ever, and parents want what's best for their kids. The difference, though, is low-income parents and families have particular challenges that make it more difficult for their children to exceed. Now, that doesn't excuse parents from taking responsibility. It certainly doesn't excuse the kids. But the point is that the fact in Montgomery County, Maryland, there's been a long-term longitudinal study showing that they're spending more money per student on low-income kids in low-income neighborhoods, and their performance is improving. Academic outcomes are improving. But in integrated neighborhoods with integrated housing, so-called green zones, where they're actually spending a little less per student than in low-income neighborhoods. The low-income students in those neighborhoods are doing much better than their peers in the other districts. Now, the reason why that's important is that it shows that positive peer role models, active parent communities, that matters more than the expense spent per kid. It matters more than even things like extended learning time, which are good things for kids. But it doesn't produce as dramatic an outcome as integrating the school does, for particularly for low-income students. Since 1966, there was the biggest survey ever done. It was an act of Congress, actually, the Coleman Report, that surveyed 600,000 students in 4,000 schools around the country. And it concluded that it's the school population, more so than an individual student's socioeconomic background. It's the socioeconomic status of the entire school population, not even the kids' classroom, but the school population, that matters most for the academic achievement of those kids. 600,000 students. That data has been looked at and teared apart again and again and again for 50 years, and it's never been disproven.
All right, back to the phones, and there are every line is taken up, so let's keep moving. And this is Joe in Rochester. Go ahead, Joe.
Yeah, I just wanted to call as someone who is in his 30s, well-educated, makes a decent living, and has chosen to live in the city of Rochester and send his children to city school district schools. So there are several of us. I have many friends who have children that are sending their kids to the Rochester City School District, and there's all sorts of reasons for doing that, whether it's the optics program at East, World of Inquiry, Montessori, School Without Walls, and on and on. There's these great programs in the city that people just really don't know about. And many of us are kind of waking up to it and saying, yeah, we want to send our kids here. We want that diversity, just as your panelist was saying. And when I was in high school, I had a teacher in Irondequoit who brought in some students from East High School. And just that one interaction, going back now 17 some odd years, has stuck with me all that time as something that was really profound, being able to interact with these kids that were coming from a place that was totally different from me. It really shaped me, just a single interaction. And so it's so important to build that in that diversity of these kids' lives. So, and that's why my family and I are choosing to stay in the city.
Joe, I just, before you hang up, I just wanted to, to let you know that I got a long email from a listener who, I don't have time to read the entire email, but the listener essentially says that there are some great schools right now in the city, and they're mentioning roughly the same list you just gave, but then they go on to say, why is it the same half dozen schools we always hear? It's SOTA. Right. You know, there are schools that are wonderful that parents do seek out, but we have dozens of schools, and we need a longer list or a better system, so it's not just a half dozen schools or so that we always single out as the ones that parents seek out. So I don't think that parent who emailed me, Joe, is disagreeing with you. I think they're just saying, you know, I think we're looking at both sides of it. Do you agree with that, Joe?
Well, what I would say is if you look at the city school district and you look at the number of schools here versus when I grew up in Irondequoit and the small handful of schools that are there, there are so many schools in the city of Rochester. I don't think people in the suburbs realize just how many students there are and how many students. And so I'm not familiar with every single program, but I could certainly name some other ones. In the neighborhood I live, there's a dual language program where you can actually send your kid to school, and half the time he learns, he gets educated in English, the other half your child gets educated in Spanish. I don't know of any other programs like that in the suburbs, but there's multiple schools in the city that offer that. And so each individual schools, they have great resources. But it's just a matter of getting the word out, and we don't have a PR team for the school to kind of put those out there.
Well, Joe, thanks for the phone call. And what Joe's saying is he saw that diversity and saw the way it impacted him, and he wanted it for his kids. And Jenna, I know you want to jump in here.
Well, Evan, I was just going to add, and thanks to all these callers for the input. There are many dots to be connected in this conversation. One is the poverty dot and how that plays out. We've often talked about a level playing field so that all parents and kids have the same opportunities. So to kind of echo what Larry said, I also think we've been very supportive of all the efforts that the city school district is making to improve their delivery, improve their achievement efforts, and we know what a challenge that is, but we've been glad to collaborate with them on some of the efforts they're making, even some along socioeconomic integration that are going to kick off this coming fall, and then to put our piece into that mix as well. So it's lots of moving parts to this conversation. Definitely, we think, again, that this proposal is not a panacea for anything. I do think, though, if there can be this network of integrated schools blossoming and blooming, it's going to improve the quality of education in schools beyond the network in terms of what the city school district is able to offer and how the suburban districts surrounding all this is going to offer. So we think it's going to kind of be the rising tide lifts all the boats kind of piece in the city and in the county.
Lynette?
Yeah, and to add to that, you know, I think our underlying premise is we want every child to have equal access to an excellent education. Our name isn't Great Schools for Some, it's Great Schools for All. So to the extent that we can create those opportunities, we want to be a part of that. We want to not just require every child to overcome the odds, but we want to change the odds for them.
Larry Marks?
Just real quickly, we think too often in school systems, and we do need to think more often in terms of a system of schools. There's one funder who uses that phrase, I think, very advisedly locally, and that's really critically important, is if we expand our horizons, not just thinking about are the options available to us based on our zip code and our particular property tax payments, but what might be available in a system of schools, then I think we all do better.
Mark Hare?
Just a couple of quick things. I mean, first of all, we have no quarrel with, obviously, as people have said already, with what parents choose to do. If parents choose to send their kids to Pittsford schools and they can afford to do that, good for them. If a family wants to stay in the city for diversity or for whatever reason, that's fine too. And it's true that you will find some classrooms and some programs and maybe a few schools in the city that are doing better than other schools. That's true. But it's also kind of dangerous to let the anecdote be the expression of policy here. The numbers are what the numbers are. And the failure rate in the city schools has been getting worse for 40 years. It is, I mean, I use the term advisedly, but I'm serious about it. It is a catastrophic outcome. It's not successful, even though there are some kids who are successful. So what we're talking about is not what parents should choose. We're talking about a system that will improve the odds. If you go to a highly segregated, high-poverty city school, your chances are greatly diminished of success. Some kids will succeed. There are kids in the 99th percentile. They will succeed. But we're talking about improving the odds for all kids. And if you have an integrated environment, you're going to improve the odds.
What is the timeline and the next step? I mean, who do you need to get in front of to start pushing this forward for these magnet schools? Which, again, listeners, if you're just joining us, we're talking about potentially a lot of different schools over the years that would be part of this system. And there's still a lot of questions about kind of which district or districts implement and how that works. But what's the plan here? Who do you need to get in front of?
Well, the next step for all this, Evan, is we're having a community forum Thursday evening, June 9th, 7 o'clock.
That's 8 days from now.
Yes. And we'd like Tim and Joe and everybody else to join us for that conversation. And it really is open to the public, and we're looking for lots of different input. At that event, we'll talk about our proposal, which is, as you've said, available on our website. We'll talk about these survey results. And we'll have some people in front of us who are willing at least to take the next step to say, I'm interested in thinking about operating one of these schools. We're also working on a legislative and financial proposal. Somebody mentioned BOCES. There are many ways to do this. We're looking for the path of least resistance to get this done and then to get some models out there. I think probably not by the fall of 17, but maybe by the fall of 18, we could have some real live opportunities available.
Is it fair to say, John, the hardest part will be getting the first 1, 2, 3 schools open, and then maybe you think that it starts to snowball?
I think that's fair, yes. We need the right combination of a kind of an entrepreneurial educational spirit, the right kind of funding model in place, the legislative possibility to have it happen. We think those people exist in our community, but it's putting all those pieces in place and somebody putting up their hand and say, we'll do it. we're hoping to be the catalyst for those conversations.
GS4A.org. Let's get through more calls before we lose the hour. Paula in Pittsford. Go ahead, Paula.
Hi. I wish you guys had come up with a magnet school about 1988 when I moved to Pittsford. We were looking for a house with two young kids and assumed that the best place was the place with the best results. And my kids spent both of their school careers going all the way through Pittsburgh schools, and I wish that they'd had an opportunity to go to school with kids of a different socioeconomic profile than they had. My son spent 2 years at BOCES in Pittsburgh in Parenton as part of the auto mechanics program, and those were the best 2 years of his school life. So I just want to tell you guys, go for it. I think it's a wonderful idea.
Thank you, Paula.
And just because it's Pittsburgh doesn't mean it's a panacea for something that's great. There are lots of parents who don't look after their kids in Pittsburgh, so I also wanted to add that bit.
Well, Paula, thanks for the phone call. Here's an email from Aaliyah, who writes to the program. Aaliyah says, I moved back to Rochester from Cambridge, Massachusetts, super diverse city, by the way, and we did end up moving to Brighton and into the Penfield School District because the school and academic choices are stronger out there. It saddens me as someone who grew up in the city of Rochester that I had to move to the suburbs to ensure that my child's education would be solid. I would prefer to be in a more diverse environment, and I would like my children to be in a more diverse environment, but I feel as though my options are limited at this time. I am a black suburban parent, and I'm surprised there are very few people of color in our district. I would support and do work for countywide magnet schools because that is what I want for my children. Thank you. And that's from Aaliyah. So a couple more votes from parents that we're hearing that line up exactly with what Mark Harris said earlier this hour, which is that generational change and parents seeing that value but wanting more options. Back to the phones, and let me get Patrick in Rochester. Go ahead, Patrick.
Yes. Now, nobody get upset, but Milton Friedman, you know, the textbook economics person forever, mentions competition. Okay, what about the voucher system, which isn't Pittsburgh, Brighton, Rochester, where children are sent, the parents have a tax voucher to send them where they feel the kids would succeed. This, by the way, is the Canadian system. You know, that country way far away. What about it? But don't be mad now.
How could we be mad at anybody referencing Milton Friedman?
Any other thoughts there? What do you think, Mark Hare?
I have thought about vouchers, and I think perhaps under some conditions we have not taken a position on that as an organization. Maybe it could work if the vouchers were actually sufficient to actually pay for full tuition in another school district. It's possible, but the evidence suggests also that integration is truly an important aspect, an important element, and that really has to be intentional. It's unlikely you're going to get there just by allowing people to move wherever they want from district to district. This is an intentional operation.
Stephen on Twitter says, I believe the city has options. Genesee Charter, World of Inquiry, SOTA, and School Without Walls. It's exactly what the emailer was saying earlier. You know, there certainly are some, and what we want are more. Matt in Rochester, next up on the phone. Go ahead, Matt.
Yes, hello. I had a question regarding the structure of the schools in the city and their apparent absence of middle schools, which is a basic tenet of putting appropriate scenarios and appropriate environments for the kids to be in, for getting the types of needs met and the types of support they need, you know, at given age groups. So my understanding is, in a large part, the city schools have pared down and removed many of their small schools, and they're putting, K through 12 in very, very large facilities, which to me, I think unless you build what is a very successful model that happens in suburban schools across the country, into the city school structure also, I don't know where you're going with that, but just by moving people around to different schools. Unless you have a good structure that is known to work well, and you fix the strategy for taking out middle schools and instead, you know, shoving more and more kids into these larger schools in larger buildings, I don't think that you're going to fix any problem.
Well, we would say, yeah, thanks for that comment. We think the structure is the key, but we think that the structure of the student population and their socioeconomic background is really the underlying issue for the most part. That there was a lot of evidence back and forth about tinkering with the size of schools or tinkering with the grade levels and the upper reaches of that, and the evidence is still out, honestly. You can argue both sides of that. But what does seem incontrovertible is the point about making sure that no more than 50% of a student population in schools come from a low-income background, that the low-income students as well as the middle-plus students do much better in those kinds of schools. You have the virtue of diversity. That's the structural change that we would argue for. And again, it's not a silver bullet. We're not saying that that's the only thing out there that should happen. We're for community schools. We're for a lot of the other the charters like Genesee and others that are out there that produce good outcomes. We want more options for our parents.
All right, so next Thursday night, John Wilkinson, one more time. That's 8 days from now. When and where and what's going on?
Thursday night, June 9th, 7 p.m. at Third Presbyterian Church on East Avenue. Will be a community-wide forum. Everybody listening and beyond is invited to attend. You'll hear three different pieces, one about the survey results, which we think are compelling, the breakthrough schools model, which is driving this whole thing, and then some potential operators and supporters of this. We'd love everybody to come, visit our website, all those things, to get involved in the conversation.
And to our panel, I wish we had another hour just to take more calls. The phone continues to ring, and we've hit the end of the hour. So thank you to our listeners for the great feedback far and wide on this issue. There's obviously a lot of interest, and we will see. If you want to learn more, Great Schools for All is online at GS4A, for the number, GS4A. org. John Wilkinson and Lynette Sparks, co-conveners, thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Great to see you. Mark Hare, thank you. Mm-hmm. And Larry Marks, the Executive Director of the Children's Agenda. Thank you, Larry.
Thank you.
Our thanks to Deprina Gutboldo, who is our intern for this semester. Kat Schwarz, our engineer. Megan Mack, producer. I'm Evan Dawson. Hope you have a lovely afternoon, and we'll see you on a Thursday.